Hey, hope everybody's having a good weekend. It's Tony Bruschi, and this is our Week in Review, where we take a look back at some of our most compelling segments of the week. Give you a chance to re-listen or catch up on stuff that maybe you missed. Enjoy.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
Look at this. Happy, loving family. A mom, dad, two sisters, all the opportunities to grow up and succeed in life. An interest in criminal justice, you're going to college. The level of intelligence and attention to detail to succeed in school. Succeeding in school so much that a professor calls you one of the best students they ever had. But what? What could lead to one day taking all of this good and then allegedly taking the lives of four other students in a gruesome crime? If you're playing along at home, you probably realized we're talking about the case against Brian Christopher Koberger, who was born November 21st, 1994. Came into the world as the only son to Michael and Marianne Koberger, born in Pennsylvania. In addition to his mom and dad, he had the two sisters, Amanda and Melissa. Grew up in a Christian family. All reports show that Koberger was raised in a nurturing and loving household. He'd attend Pleasant Valley High School before pursuing an associate degree in psychology at Northampton Community College. Could this have been the first clue that Koberger was looking to find answers on a far deeper level? But a lot of people in that age, especially if you're interested in psychology, as it seems the family kind of was, you're digging deeper. Nothing wrong with that. What thoughts was he having, though? One may never really know for sure what he was thinking back then and what led to him allegedly committing one of the most gruesome killings in the state of Idaho's history. We did have some of that evidence pointed out to us in some of his online postings, which we found, but let's take a look more at the actual education and some of the things he was doing in his criminology classes. A little trip down memory road, if you will. After receiving his associate's degree in psychology, Koberger would attend DeSales University, where an associate professor would characterize Koberger as one of her best students ever, calling Koberger a great writer and a brilliant mind. Seen a brilliant mind, I don't know. Other staff members at DeSales University had communications with Koberger, but never in person, saying, "I never saw him in person. I couldn't tell you how tall he was or how much he weighed. My only interaction with him was via email and Zoom. I didn't know anything about him, whether he was married and a girlfriend." It's just normal this day and age, really. As his higher education journey continued, professors began to stress, they thought or assumed he was okay, but really didn't know, as they knew him only virtually. One of those nice advantages of today. You don't really need to know anybody. He's like, okay, information, data. They basically become sources of data. If the data is correct that they're submitting, well, then they must be good, right? Seemed normal to me. But then again, I only knew him from teaching him online. I didn't know anything personal about him. I believe he worked full-time like most of our graduate students do. Professors advised Koberger with his thesis, which involved questioning people about their thoughts and feelings during the commissions of a crime. I was one of the professors who helped Brian with his proposal on his graduate thesis. His capstone project, said a DeSales University professor. He did put out a routine questionnaire for his thesis. It looked weird, and I understand from the public view, but in criminology, it's normal. But how normal really was it? I think that's the question. When we take a look at the thesis and the questionnaire that he put out, in retrospect, doesn't seem all that normal. At the moment in time, though, possibly, Here's the research questionnaire. This information came out quite a ways back. If you're kind of new to covering or not covering, but listening to this story, this may be new information to you. Take it how you'll take it. It says, hello. This is what was posted on the DeSales University website. It says, hello, my name is Brian. I'm inviting you to participate in a research project that seeks to understand how emotions and psychological traits influence decision-making when committing a crime. In particular, the study seeks to understand the story behind your most recent criminal offense with an emphasis on your thoughts and feelings throughout your experience. In the event that your most recent offense was not one that led to a conviction, you may still participate. Additional surveys are included after the open-ended section as to best understand your unique traits. The study should take about 15 to 20 minutes to fully complete. Your identity and all answers provided are completely confidential, and the link to the survey is also an anonymous link. The research study has been approved by DeSales University, IRB. Participants must be 18 years of age or older. If you opt to participate, you may terminate participation at any time and for any reason. So what were those questions in that survey? What was the first move you made in order to accomplish your goal? Please detail any thoughts and feelings at this point. Did you prepare for the crime before leaving your home? Please detail what you were thinking and feeling at this point. Before leaving, is there anything else you did? After committing the crime, what were you thinking and feeling? Before making your move, how did you approach the victim or target? Please detail what you were thinking and feeling. After arriving, what steps did you take prior to locating the victim or target, i.e. person or object? Please detail your thoughts or feelings. And why did you choose that victim or target over others? Just normal questions for a graduate student doing a criminology research paper, right? That sounds. Or was it a guide to how he should be feeling as he's carrying out these actions? From someone who's already self-admitted that he doesn't have feelings. In an earlier online post from when he was younger, not recognizing empathy, not recognizing joy, just almost having to take cues from everybody else and how you should feel when doing anything, from hugging your grandparents at Christmas to, you know, committing that crime. Or stalking people. These questions, very specific. And almost assuming that whoever he is interviewing is someone who is stalking someone. Who is premeditatively planning a very dark event. It's not just your average, I'm going to go steal some stuff from the Quickie Mart. This is written very much in line with the alleged crimes that he was about to carry out. Now, hindsight is, of course, 2020. It's easy to look at that and make those sort of assumptions there. It's a criminology theory called script theory. It's a normal theory on how and why criminals commit their crimes. That's what one of the professors said. And in theory, yes. But when it all lines up with Koberger, it's a little more creepy. From Northampton Community College to DeSales University to Washington State University, a native of Pennsylvania who attended schooling in his home state, what would be the reasoning of him obtaining his PhD on the other side of the country? That was another question that's been brought up. Could it just be an attraction to the prestige of the Washington State University criminal justice program, or could it be an attraction of an evil kind? The opportunity to carry out all the examples of crimes he learned about as a student. I guess we're just going to have to wait to find out in a few months or years if this case ever goes to trial.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts so you don't miss any of our updates and discussions on the cases that we are following right here for you. You can get an ad-free experience through Apple Podcasts right now. My name is Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.